Welcome to Today with Dr. K. I'm Dr. K. Wise Whitehead here again to have another conversation with you about some of the stories that matter. Folks, I want to begin by saying happy Founders Day to the lovely ladies of Delta Sigma Theta Sorority Incorporated, my sorority sisters. And so it is always a pleasure and delight to get to this day and to remember the burning sands of DST and remember the sisterhood bonds that we share and just remember the importance of sororities and fraternities, that D9 spirit. And what that means to all of us, African-Americans in this country, the power of the D9, the black fraternities and sororities, it is strong. It's a strong and powerful bond. So happy Founders Day to the ladies of Delta Sigma Theta Sorority Incorporated. We want to talk a lot about COVID-19 and the impeachment today. Now, I sent a clip, and I want to ask Justina to pull it up, of Maxine Waters standing up and calling for impeachment 2.0. Maxine Waters, who we call Auntie Max, stood up and said, not this time, we are done. I want to start there because I think that will set the tone for our conversation today. Let's take a listen to Representative Maxine Waters.
The party is now the Trump Party. And I want you to know that this is a Trump power grab that will not stop. It will not stop with attacking the Capitol and our state legislatures. This president intends to exercise power long after he is out of office. It is reported that the president of the United States watched the invasion from the Oval Office of our Capitol and seemingly enjoyed it. I want you to know we should be concerned that the Republicans will not defend him, and he is capable of starting a civil war. He must be impeached. He must be stopped now. The Republican Party is now...
That is Sister Representative Maxine Waters calling for an end to the madness that we have been living under for the past 4 years. It's not just enough that the presidency is coming to an end. The word is that in order to stop Donald Trump from being able to run again, in order to cut off his pension, to stop him from having lifetime security that we pay for, to stop him from having access to the $1 million travel money that presidents are able to tap into. In order to stop all of that, we have to get the impeachment on the books. Now, we can talk about the impeachment within the House of Representatives. There's a strong feeling. They've impeached him before, so it's not like they're going to have a problem impeaching him again. The real question that we must think about is whether or not the Senate is going to go forward. And the way it stands right now, I am not sure that Vice President Mike Pence is going to be persuaded to take this final step. Like, we need the president to get impeached through the work of the vice president. That is what we need. We want that to happen. We want to have a strong message sent to Donald Trump and his supporters that this is not who we are. You know what, baby? Maybe instead of saying this is not who we are, we say this is not who we want to be, right? Because a lot of people would argue that where we are right now, this is America. That's what Childish Gambino said. This is America. This is where we are. This is what we look like. This is how we deal with tension, stress. This is what we do when we have our backs up against the wall. It just so happens that it played out at the Capitol. I also want us to think deeply about COVID-19 today. Yesterday, a milestone was hit. We hit the day when the highest number of people died of COVID-19 to date. We have been dealing with the reality of this virus now for a little over a year. And we are not slowing down yet. In fact, it's getting worse, much, much worse. According to the New York Times, they put out earlier today what they call a game changer. Three things that are changing the game. The first one is about the new variants of COVID-19. The New York Times said that scientists are still learning about new versions of the novel coronavirus. These new variants that emerged in Britain, South Africa, Brazil, and Japan. The evidence so far indicates that they are much more infectious than the Italian strain, which has been circulating here since February, the one that we have in America. We've had in this country since February is the Italian strain. It's not even the Wuhan Chinese strain, which I think is really interesting that I did not know that there were already different strains attached to different parts of the country. So we have the Italian strain here. The new strains, the Brazilian strain, the South African strain, the Britain strain, the Japanese strain are all much more scarier. Behavior that may have once been moderately risky, say airplane travel, is now even more risky. The variants seem to be one reason that cases worldwide are spiking. So if you were getting comfortable, the word is that you are no longer able to stand in your comfort zone because it's getting worse. Two, the mass vaccination campaign in the United States is off to a terrible start. I am not sure why anyone thought that we would be able to fight this thing with Donald Trump at the head. The Trump administration promised that 20 million Americans would be vaccinated by January 1st. In fact, fewer than 3 million were, and only about 9 million up to now have had their shots. 9 million out of 327 million people. The Deep South has the country's lowest vaccination rates. But it isn't just a Republican failure. California, Virginia, and some other Democratic-run states have also been very slow. Now, there's a feeling that vaccinations will accelerate in the coming weeks, especially because President-elect Joe Biden and his team are more focused on trying to get that vaccine out. But if we continue this way under Trump's administration and slow pace, it's going to take 10 years, according to Dr. Lena Nguyen, for us to reach herd immunity. If we ramp it up to speed, which means they are counting on you and I to actually take the vaccine, if they ramp it up, they can have a quarter of Americans with their first shot by April 1st, half of the American public with their shots by June 1st, and three quarters of the American public with their shot by mid-autumn. So we have to really talk about Operation Warp Speed. The third thing that the New York Times pointed out is that things are likely to get worse before they get better. The virus is spreading so rapidly that hospitals are struggling to keep up. About 130,000 Americans are hospitalized with COVID symptoms, more than double the number from 2 months ago. The strain on hospitals raises the possibility that many patients will not receive the best available treatments. Listen to this. Los Angeles is now rationing oxygen. Like, I don't even know how to have that make sense to me. L.A. is rationing oxygen. In El Paso, Texas, they're saying that they're providing oxygen, a company. It's like we're providing oxygen to temporary hospitals. And it's absolutely nuts. And I'm putting that in quotations. That's what an executive said at a company in El Paso, Texas. The recent data on cases and on deaths is very, very noisy in terms of it's been active because the diagnoses are artificially following the holidays and being slowed down by the holidays. Even with that, even with the fact that we haven't quite seen the numbers from New Year's Eve, We're still getting the numbers from the partying that happened after Christmas. Deaths have already hit a record this week. That we are averaging now on a regular basis a 9/11 per day. I'm saying 9/11 because they're talking 3,000 plus people are dying on average every day. With us hitting the record number yesterday. Yesterday is when we hit it. Over 4,000 people died in one day of COVID-19. So the real deal is that unless we all start wearing our masks more often, and unless we spend less time together in cramped spaces, and unless we all commit to getting the vaccine, then many more people are going to die. That is simply the reality of where we are at this moment. And this is an urgent call. It ties in to what we're going to talk about in this hour. We have two things that are demanding a lot of our time. One is the impeachment process happening in Washington, D.C., where the House of Representatives is working on passing the articles of impeachment for a second time against Donald J. Trump. That's the word on the floor, that he needs to be impeached. But we know you can be impeached in the House, but in order to get you out of the big house, you got to be impeached in the Senate. Like, y'all, you know, we got to understand that if you want to know the real power center in this country, it's not the 435 members of the House of Representatives. That's not where the power is. And if you think about it, it's overwhelming. The real power base in this country comes from the Senate. That's where the real, those 100 people over there, two senators from every state, a junior and a senior senator. That's where the real power is. And so you can pass it in the House all you want. If it stops in the Senate, he is not leaving the House. We know that because of Bill Clinton. We saw that with Bill Clinton. I'm sorry, we saw it with Trump 1.0, right? So you can be impeached by the House. But if the Senate either A, does not even put it on the floor, Mitch McConnell, or B, fails to pass the legislation, then there will be no packing your bags and getting out. There'll be no stopping of him being able to get his pension, get his plans, get his staff. None of that will end if we can't get him impeached in the Senate. And then there's a third layer to this. So they say, well, we can do impeachment. That's one layer. Impeachment in the House of Representatives, okay? The second layer is, okay, well, let's get him impeached in the Senate. That's one layer of this process here, two-part layer. There is another way to get him. Enact the 25th Amendment. Simply put that in motion. It would take the work of the vice president and eight cabinet members, if they even have eight cabinet members left, and people are resigning left and right, right? It would take the work of the vice president and eight cabinet members to say that Donald J. Trump, because of his call for an insurrection, because of him whipping up the crowd into a state of fiery anger and frustration and rage, he's unfit to serve as the president of the United States. We know that as long as he is the president, then what he has in his hands, and we're speaking metaphorically in his hands, maybe around his wrist, maybe tied to his ankle, I have no idea. He's got the football. And the football, of course, are the nuclear codes. He has the ability to send off a number of nuclear weapons without having to get permission from the Senate or the House. That's part of what the power we give the president. Now, with this second impeachment of Donald Trump, that seems to be very likely, we're going to talk about that. We got to unpack it. I have a political scientist coming on to help us unpack that. But we also got to talk about COVID-19. Both of these things are happening at the same time. Mike Pence. Now, you might remember Mike Pence because he's the current vice president. I know Mike Pence because the group last week trying to siege at the Capitol, they were yelling, "Hang Mike Pence." They said they bought a noose so they can find him, take him, and hang him for the fact that he spoke against the president. He wrote a letter to Madam Speaker Nancy Pelosi. And in this letter, he said that you and the Democratic caucus are demanding that the cabinet and I invoke the 25th Amendment. I do not believe that such a course of action is in the best interest of our nation or consistent with our Constitution. So in other words, he's saying, nope, I ain't doing it, Nancy, no matter what you say. After the horrific events of this last week, what we're focused on now is ensuring an orderly transition. Then Mike Pence in this letter quotes the Bible. He said, the Bible says that for everything there is a season and a time for every purpose under heaven, a time to heal and a time to build up. That time is now. In the midst of a global pandemic, economic hardship for millions of Americans, and the tragic events of January 6th, now is the time for us to come together. Now is the time to heal. He said he's pledged to ensure an orderly transition of power. He ends it with, so help me God. Sincerely, Michael R. Pence. In other words, no, I ain't putting him out the office. No, I ain't going to be a part of it. No, I ain't going to do it. I'm not doing it. I am not going to commit political suicide by invoking the 25th Amendment against the current sitting president who, for all intents and purposes, is the Republican Party. You have to think about the strength of the party. 74 million Republicans voted for Donald J. Trump. That's the Republican Party. The Republican Party is fractured now. They're in pieces. They're all over the place. But the most organized party within the Republican Party are the Trumplicans. 410-319-8888. What are your thoughts on this? Mike Pence is saying no. While Nancy Pelosi is going full steam ahead, Mike Pence is saying no, I'm not going to invoke the 25th Amendment. If you want to get rid of him, you need to do it between the House and the Senate. We have Lamar on the phone from Perry Hall. Lamar, how are you?
Hi, Dr. K. Thank you for taking my call.
Absolutely.
I usually don't call in. I just like to listen. And the president, even though he has the nuclear codes and the briefcase and a person escorting him, he can't make a nuclear strike without the unanimous consent of the Joint Chiefs of Staff. So that's actually, I'm not correcting you, but him having a nuclear code is one thing, but launching a nuclear strike, he'd have to have a reason to justify it, where there's imminent danger on the other person who you're striking it against. So, I mean, I appreciate all of your, I'm not with the president, but you just can't make that statement without having some substantial, justification.
Let's talk about it, because during the Cold War, the United States military put this kind of elaborate system in place that is designed to control the thousands of nuclear weapons in the country. Like, there are a number of checks and balances. There are no officers who work with the intercontinental ballistic missiles. There are no officers that solely work on the nuclear-armed aircraft or nuclear submarines. They're unable to launch missiles alone. They usually work in teams of two. But there is an exception to that. The entire system is designed to respond to the sole decision of the president. That is the exception. I mean, I'm just, I understand you said it's not true. I'm actually looking at
the Joint Chiefs of Staff, the Joint Chiefs of Staff already stated that they would not go along with the president if he wanted to make a nuclear strike.
I hear you, Lamar. I'm just looking right now at the research. I mean, I'm actually reading the article right now, because everyone's talking about Donald Trump having that power to do this. So I hear what you're saying. I also know, according to the former director of national intelligence, who just broke it down to let people know that what happened during the Cold War, it was set up to put an exception in place. So I'd just like to know, Lamar, I feel your passion. I'm only giving you what's actually been written recently, coming directly from the former director of national intelligence, talking about the fail-safes in place and what power the president has. Okay, so we lost Lamar. Lamar, could you give us a call back? Because I'd like to know where you got the information from. I think it is important to break this down. So just to tell you where I got my information from, that article, as well as Peter Fever's book, which is Guarding the Guardians, Civilian Control of Nuclear Weapons in the United States. And Peter Fever actually served on the National Security Council staff during the George W. Bush administration. He's also a professor at Duke University. But he talks about how the president has to give a lawful order. The order has to be authentic and seen as authentic. But it is set up, and the way it is set up is that the president, in so many ways, has the sole decision. The entire system is designed to respond to the sole decision of the president. There are a number of people who are saying it's actually a little scary when you think about it. The whole system's built to ensure rapid response if necessary. It's not as if it's a fail-safe that is built in to slow things down, because it's not. I'm looking at it right now. You know, you got to have some understanding of the levers that the president can exercise. And frankly, he has access to nuclear codes, a system that's based upon rapid response. I think that there are a number of people who are concerned about this. Nancy Pelosi expressed a concern about this, about what does it mean to believe that the person who's at the top of the chain of command is a person you don't believe is fit to serve or run the country. He's been banned from Twitter, but he still has nuclear codes. He can't post anything on YouTube, but he's still got the football. He can't go on Shopify. He can't go on, he can't post anything on Goodreads, but he has nuclear codes. I think we have to unpack this and figure this out. There are many people, as Lamar said, down the chain, but it's all designed to respond rapid fashion to the president. This is Today with Dr. K. I'm Dr. K. Wise Whitehead. Stay with us. Back to Today with Dr. K. I'm Dr. K. Wise Whitehead. So, folks, I want to go back for a second before I go to Dr. Sharon Wright Austin to Lamar's comments. Okay, so Lamar was talking about, what about the president? We were talking about the president having access to nuclear weapons, and Lamar said there are all these fail safes in place. I just want to add some more information to that, Lamar, and I wish you would call back. There are two things on the table. One is what they call the barman scenario. And the barman is that, you know, they say, well, what if the president gets up in the middle of the night, he's angry, he's banging on the table, and he gets into a tweet storm with someone. He's like, you know what, I'm angry with, John Smith in Korea, so I'm going to blow him up. Can he just push a button and move? Okay. No. Because even though he pushes a button, there are supposed to be people who are around him to help him talk through it. He gives the final authority, but the goal is in a 30-minute window that there are people in place to talk him through it, to see if they can talk him down. But do understand that we do not have a two-man or two-woman rule, that there are not two people who make this decision. It is one person. The system responds quickly to one person. So can he walk in by himself, open a door, and just push a button? No. But if he's calling for a nuclear strike, they said there's a 30-minute window for those who are around him to see if they can talk him down, to come to another idea. But once the decision is made to go, then it moves very quickly and very rapidly after that. I think that's the concern that people have. It's not a two-man rule. It's not Donald Trump and someone else who both say yes. It is designed, and I'm looking right here at the information. It is designed, the way it was set up during the Cold War, is designed to move very quickly as a response to the president. And for a lot of people, that is very scary. It's something we never thought about. It's something we don't spend a lot of time talking about, but it's something that has come up repeatedly during this presidency, even more so now that we're in the final days. I want to go to Dr. Sharon Wright Austin, political scientist from the University of Florida, to talk with us about what's going on in Washington, D.C. now, and maybe to spread some light on the concern that people have around Donald Trump and nuclear weapons. I mean, should we be concerned that this president might just go off, be upset, and in that 30-minute window be able to move things forward in such a way that we can't dial it back? Dr. Sharon Wright Austin, how are you?
I'm doing fine.
Good. Thank you so much. So first, let's start with what's happening in Washington, D.C. with the impeachment, because I know that they are now discussing it with taking a vote on the floor of the House of Representatives. Can you give us some insight into that and into what you think the final vote's going to be, how it's looking now?
Right. I've been watching it pretty much all day, and I think that the final vote, they're right now in the process of closing arguments, and so they're getting ready to vote. And so I would really be shocked if the House of Representatives didn't vote to impeach him for the second time. So that vote is about to come in today because they said they were going to move quickly. They said they were going to make a decision today. And this is something that the protocol was different this time because usually the House Judiciary Committee investigates things and then makes a recommendation to the full House, and then they have these debates and votes. But now, because of, I guess, the extremity of what happened last week at the Capitol, they decided to forego that and just to bring it to the full floor. Congressmen have been debating whether they either are for it or against it. They're making their closing arguments now, and they're soon be able getting ready to vote, and that vote should be announced by the day's end, probably even within the next hour or a couple of hours.
Okay, so because we had a feeling since the House voted before that it was going to pass. Talk to us about the real place where decides whether he's going to pack his bags or not, which is the Senate. Is it going to get to the Senate floor under Mitch McConnell, and how do you think it's going to go?
Well, I think we pretty much know he is not going to be removed from office. He only has 7 days left. This time next week, after 12 noon, he will be gone anyway. And so they just simply don't have the time to get this to the Senate because the House of Representatives votes to impeach. The Senate votes to convict. And if a person is convicted in the Senate, then they could possibly be removed from office, which, as we know, has never actually happened. The closest we ever came to removing a president was way back with Andrew Johnson, and he only escaped conviction by one vote. And that's the closest we've come. So no president has ever actually been removed. Richard Nixon resigned from office. But I think he's not going to be removed from office. But the question is, as James Clyburn just recently said, the issue is whether or not they're going to debate this after Joe Biden's first 100 days, because that's what Congressman Clyburn has said. And if that be the case, then Kamala Harris will be in office, Joe Biden will be in office, John Ossoff, Raphael Warnock of Georgia will be in office. And so that will mean that there will be this 50-50 split between Democrats and Republicans in the Senate, and Kamala Harris will have the tie-breaking vote. And so if that be the case, if they wait until after those first 100 days when there is a Democratic majority, you could say, in the Senate, then he could possibly, they could say that they can vote that he be convicted. He'll already have left office, but if he's convicted in the Senate, they can also have the Senate vote as to whether or not he can be banned from ever running from office again. And if by chance they have that vote, they only need a simple majority. In order for him to be convicted, you need 67 of the 100 senators. But in order for them to say that he can never run again, you don't need 67 people. You just need a simple majority. So I think that's kind of what they're looking ahead to do, is to ban him from running again in 2024 or at some point in the future, as he has sort of even hinted that he's planning to do.
So with everything that's going on, I know that Joe Biden and Kamala Harris and their America, COVID-19 is going to take the priority, as well as it should. Do you think between COVID-19, the economy, and everything else that's happening, that they will make impeaching Donald Trump a priority?
I think that they will, because if not, they wouldn't have gone through this. I think that there are people in Congress who are determined to show Donald Trump that he's not above the law. And I think that some of them were just not only so angry, but so terrified. Because if you just remember, just the footage that we saw on television was scary enough. But can you just imagine if you were there and if they were actually looking for you? And if by chance they had actually found some of the members of Congress, I mean, can you just imagine that they could have killed them? And so I think that they're determined not to let this go. And that's why they're moving ahead so quickly to get this through the House of Representatives. And then also at some point to get it to the Senate after the Democrats are inaugurated and there's a 50-50 split. And I really do think that I don't know if they're going to be able to convict him in the Senate. I doubt that they will. But I think that's what they're trying to do, is make it so that he can run for office again.
And him not being able to run for office, there are other things, too, that he's not going to be able to tap into. Can you talk a little bit about that as well?
Right. He'll lose his Secret Service security detail. He'll lose his stipend. But I don't even think President Trump is even concerned about those things because, you know, he's a wealthy man, so he doesn't really need the stipend, which is about $200,000 a year, which is a lot of money for the average person. But for him, that probably is much of nothing. But I think just losing the secret security detail. And then the main thing is just the impact this will have on his legacy. I think he already has killed his legacy. But if he now is about to be the only president in American history ever to be impeached twice. And even though some people would argue that, oh, it's political, but nevertheless, that really just hurts his legacy. And he will forever be known for that. Because if you think about it, with Richard Nixon, when Richard Nixon's name is called, what's the first thing that comes to mind?
Yeah.
Most people don't even remember any of the positive things he accomplished. They just remember that, oh, Watergate, and he resigned. And even with Bill Clinton, he was impeached as well. So a lot of people, when you think of Bill Clinton, you have to mention Monica Lewinsky. And
right.
This is really going to just kill and destroy his legacy, just of anything that people may have thought he might have done that was positive. It's all going to be forgotten because he's going to be known because of the insurrection that just happened and also because of the second impeachment.
Okay, so now with that in mind, right? So for those of us who live in that America, it makes sense. Donald Trump's legacy will be tarnished. It will be forever linked to all the things he's done. There's about 74 million people that are rejecting that legacy, and they have created their own legacy of Donald Trump, which includes him being successful and prolific and him being life-changing and him, you know, toeing the line for democracy. Can you talk about what's happening on that side?
Well, on that side, I think one thing that we learned from what happened last week is that we don't take white nationalism and white supremacy as seriously as we should in our country. Because even though people are claiming that, oh, we had no idea this was going to happen, that's ridiculous. You had to have known, because these were people who were advertising this on the Internet, and these are people who have been threatening to American security for many, many years. But I think that because they're white, they're not seen as being as threatening as they would be if they were black or if they were of another race. So that's the first thing. I think he's mobilized those people, and they feel empowered by him. And as a result of that, we have a tendency to stereotype people who are in the militia movement and who are these white supremacists, white nationalists, as being people who are poor, isolated. But if you really look at the people who've been arrested, most of them are people who are very educated, very successful, upper middle class. One man, the man who was seen carrying Nancy Pelosi's podium, his wife is a doctor. I saw his two attorneys on television yesterday. And so these are people who are, one is the son of a judge. I mean, these are professional people. And those are the people who really respect President Trump. But nevertheless, I think that it's mobilized them, and that's why there is a concern that he'll run again and win. Because the 74 million people who voted for him still are willing to vote for him. And whether or not we like it or not, he remains the most influential Republican in our country. And there's a strong chance that he could win again. And that's what the Democrats are trying to prevent from happening.
So then let me ask you this. Okay, so let's just, without taking Donald Trump out of the equation, I know we have a lot of calls I'm going to get to you in just a second. Let me ask one more question. Without taking Donald Trump out of the equation, I have a two-part question for you. What do you think is the future of the Republican Party if Donald Trump does not get removed and can't run again, and then I'd like you to answer, what do you think is the future of the Democratic Party when you have this kind of push between the moderate Democrats and the more progressive Democrats? So the future of both parties.
Yeah, I think both parties are dealing with various divisions. Like with the Democrats, as you mentioned, there is progressive wing versus the moderate wing. And with the Republicans, there are the Trump Republicans versus the moderate Republicans. And so I think it's difficult for both parties. And I think Americans are really tired of seeing this partisan bickering, Democrat versus Republican, over and over again. And we really wish that the members of Congress in particular could come together, because we've seen the impact of that even with the stimulus checks. And, you know, a lot of people are really hurting and need help, but they're so busy fighting with each other that they couldn't come together to get the $2,000 stimulus check that a lot of Americans needed. So both parties are going to have to try to unify. Mm. I think it'll be easier for the Democrats and the Republicans, because Donald Trump has really been a very divisive figure in the Republican Party. And I think they're beginning to see that now because of what happened last week, that one man could have the power to motivate people to behave like that. It really is shocking. So the Republicans are going to have to find a way to reach out to people of color, to younger voters, and to try to win those votes again, because those are the voters that really elected the two senators in Georgia, and they really are going to have to expand their message, but it's going to be difficult as long as Trump is there.
All right, let's get to some phone calls. Folks, I'm on with Dr. Sharon Wright Austin. We're talking about the impeachment process that's happening with Donald Trump, as well as the future of the Democratic and Republican Party. Let's go to Sekou from Baltimore. Sekou, how are you?
I'm fine. How you doing, Dr. K?
I'm doing well. I'm on with Dr. Austin as well.
How you doing, Doctor?
Just fine.
Hey, listen, Dr. K, that information you read that Vice President Pence was reading from the Bible?
Yes.
You got to check behind folk when they start quoting that Bible.
Oh, yes.
In that same book, in that same chapter, it also says, there's a time for war, there's a time for peace, there's a time for love, and there's a time for hate. He left that part out.
You know what I thought was funny too, Sekou? He did dot, dot, dot when he left about, like, dot, 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 time to heal, dot. I was like, wait, where's the rest of it? So he just pulled out the pieces that worked for him.
Exactly. Y'all have a nice day.
You too. So, Dr. Austin, let me ask you about that. So we know there are two ways to get this man out of office. Well, the third way is you just wait him out, right? Because come January 20th, he's going to be gone. One way is the impeachment. We know that they're going to look for that. That's kind of a long-term solution because it can't happen immediately. But the 25th Amendment option.
Right.
Can you talk a little bit about that? Because I just read Mike Pence's letter where he's saying it's not going to happen under my watch.
Yeah. Yeah, we pretty much knew that it wasn't. With the 25th Amendment, Vice President Pence would have had to say that the president is unfit to serve and that he would take over, I guess, in these last 7 days. He would be the acting president. He would have had to get the support of the majority of the president's cabinet in order to do that. And Nancy Pelosi gave him an ultimatum that if you don't invoke the 25th Amendment and have him removed that way, then we're going to impeach him, which he refused to do, which isn't at all unexpected. So that's what happened with that. But the thing with Mike Pence is that he knew that if he had said anything or done anything to make it so that President Trump wouldn't remain in office, a lot of people have threatened him, and his political career as a Republican would be over. Because, you know, again, President Trump has so much influence with so many people all across the country that if Mike Pence had him removed, not only would those people have been trying to kill him, but also they would have made sure that he never ran for or won office again as a Republican. And I'm sure in the future he probably has a plan of running for president, and that would just pretty much be off the table.
Oh, because I was calling it political suicide.
Yes, it would have been political career suicide for him.
All right, let's go to James from Baltimore. James, how are you?
How you doing, Dr. King?
I'm doing well, thank you.
You had one caller there, your first caller. A lot of that stuff people said was true. You have to look at the president's executive privilege. Mm-hmm. And it has to be a consent by the government, or the consent of the government, of the governed, as they say. And the whole philosophy of that, it's coming from a biblical perspective. You got to look at those who wrote it as being a just war.
Right.
You're looking at it being just as it is, a just war, then you have to look at things that are just right.
Okay.
I mean, you can Google this stuff and Wikipedia what I'm saying, but the president as him being a person of himself, being a person or a being in himself, he has what is called sovereignty. And a lot of things that he can, and that gives him what this thing, what he has is this immunity. And and ruining his career, he really didn't say much to a point where you can prove intent.
Okay.
It's an actor's risk when somebody's saying stuff like that under the First Amendment. It has to be done.
Okay.
And he hasn't said anything to prove that he actually did it.
Okay. Thank you so much, James. I appreciate you. So, Dr. Austin, there's a lot of talk, and this is one of the conversation points we had before you joined us, around this releasing of the nuclear weapons.
Uh-huh.
Nancy Pelosi, of course, this happened last week. She reached out to the U.S. military about taking away President Trump's nuclear authority.
Right.
She's very concerned that in her mind, and maybe a lot of us believe this, that an unstable person or an unstable genius, as he calls himself, has the power and the authority to launch nuclear weapons. And so we were having that conversation, like, no, it takes a whole lot of people. No. And I went and got the research, Dr. Austin, where said, whether you like it or not, it rests in the hand. It's not a two-man system. Donald Trump doesn't need a buddy to say yes. It rests with him.
Mm-hmm.
And it moves very quickly if he decides to move in. There are people who are supposed to talk him down, but he has the final authority.
Right, because he's in commander-in-chief of the armed forces, and he's, as president of the United States, he has so much authority, and that's what Nancy Pelosi and also Bernie Sanders brought up the same point. Bernie Sanders even said that if he is someone who's so unstable that he can't be trusted to even send out a tweet or post something on Facebook, do we really want him to have this type of authority? And so that's why she has made an appeal to have his nuclear codes removed so that he can't, out of anger or for some other reason, maybe just do something that can just cause devastation all over the world. But he does have a whole lot of leeway as president of the United States to be able to make these decisions. Now, he can't make these decisions alone, but he does have a lot more power and more influence than other people who would be involved, like other people in the military. And that's something that people are really on pins and needles for these last 7 days, wondering what President Trump is going to do. And to be honest with you, it's almost just exhausting. It just kind of even makes you not even want to turn on the news because, you know, it's all Donald Trump. And it's like every day something's happening and you just really don't know what to expect from him.
I'm so glad you just kind of helped us to understand that, because I think people sometimes think that being the commander-in-chief is something that's a shared position. It's not. The buck stops right there. And that is a very powerful position to be in, and Donald Trump knows it.
Exactly. And Donald Trump is in that position for the next 7 days.
That is so scary.
And that's a frightening thought.
It is frightening. Let's go to Wesley from Reisterstown. Wesley, how are you?
Oh, fine. And yourself, Dr. K?
I'm doing well. Thank you.
I just want to give a shout-out to the Morgan alum, the sister who's now the interim Capitol Police Chief, right? Okay, now, one day I want to talk about Sherrilyn Ifill, but not today.
Okay.
thing I want to talk about is the Republicans now. Oh, and I do want to challenge what the doctor said. I don't want to get into a big debate with her. I don't want to do that. But to say that Donald Trump is wealthy, I don't know. He has a lot of assets, but I think his liabilities is more than his assets. Okay.
Yeah, you're right.
Okay. So now, all this stuff about healing, okay? Where was the healing when he called Senator Obama was not born in the United States?
Yes.
Well, no, don't forget this guy's black. Don't forget that. So where was the healing when the people at the Annapolis Gazette were all killed, and the next day he said, the press is the enemy of the people? Where was the healing when the governor of Michigan, they were trying to kidnap her, and he talked about her like a dog the very next day? Where was the healing? Now, I'm not an Obama person per se, but I did go to get a physical at my doctor the other day, and it was free because of Obama. I'm not a John McCain man either, because he was in the Navy, and I'm an ex-Marine, so that's a deal breaker right there. Plus, he fought the Martin Luther King holiday. And also, he was saying that John McCain wasn't a war hero, so didn't want to fly a flag and half staff and all that. John McCain was in a prisoner of war camp in Vietnam for 5.5 years. Now, that doesn't make me like him any better in some ways, but we got to look at the whole person, okay?
Okay.
So all the healing, and I'm sure that was very painful to John McCain's family, who I don't care about either, but there's just a sense of human dignity that you have to have when somebody has died and at least has served his country. So from that standpoint, I would just like to say, where is the healing that we should be giving him now? Okay. None. Thank you.
All right. Thank you so much. Let me get a couple more callers in here, Dr. Austin. Let's go to Dwayne from Columbia. Dwayne, how are you?
Hello. Hi. How you doing, two doctors?
We're doing well.
How you guys doing?
We're doing fine.
Okay, I'll make my comment. The first thing is we need to understand white supremacy have been deflating ever since black folks have started becoming pro-black.
Mm-hmm.
So in this deflation of white supremacy, what do you think about this new attorney general that's picked, Merrick Garland? What do you think his role is going to be, and do you think he's going to be actually doing anything to help black folks?
Thank you so much, Dr. Austin. So Merrick Garland, who, of course, was tapped to become a Supreme Court justice, and they would not even take that to the floor to vote on it under President Obama, has now been tapped to be attorney general. So what do you think?
Right. Well, I think that he's going to be very hospitable to a lot of the racial justice incidents that we've had. And I think that we're going to be in a much better position with him as attorney general than we ever were with William Barr. And so I think he has a reputation of being more of a moderate person. He's not necessarily a liberal, but he does seem to be pretty enlightened, especially when it comes to racial issues. So to answer the caller's question, I think that I'm optimistic about all of the people so far that Joe Biden has named in his administration, and I think he's going to be someone who's going to really try to be fair when it comes to race.
All right, let's see. Can we get one more caller in there? Justina, all right, let's have Donna on the phone from Baltimore. Donna, how are you?
How you doing, Dr. Wright and Dr. K?
Doing well.
Just fine.
My question is, the Southern Poverty Law Center and the Anti-Defamation League have been warning us this is heading in the last two presidents, Bush and Obama. And my question is, looking at, a person who's in studying mental health behavior, looking at the mental health of the people who did the riots, a lot of them were heavy drug users and alcohol users, which I had recognized, and a couple of my friends who are in the field recognized. And I don't hear anything in the media talking about that, about the mental state of the people who were involved in the riots, because Dr. K had a gentleman who actually was in it, and he talked about the heavy drug usage. And when I read a lot of the posts from the people who were there, that's all they talked about is getting high, drunk, whatever. There was a tremendous drug usage in that crowd, which got them so aggressive to go in. I wanted your perspective on that, and why hasn't substance abuse, drug addiction, and mental health been talked about when it came to this whole incident of what's going on in America and at that that mob scene? And I'll hang up and listen. Thank you.
Thank you so much. Now, we know, Dr. Austin, that as of yet, we don't have any substantial proof about drug use. I know that they're now tracking people down, but I don't know even know if they can even find out whether they were on drugs.
Right.
But is there any sense that there needs to be some work done around mental health in this country when it comes to that type of rage and hostility that we saw last week?
Right. I think that's a good point that she just made about some of them saying that they had been drinking based on things that they had posted. And there should be some research done on their mental health. But really, when you think about the discussions about mental health, sometimes mental health can be used as an excuse.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes, especially when a white person commits a crime against a black person, usually people say that, they had some type of mental illness, rather than say that it had anything to do with racism. So sometimes I guess it could work both ways. But she's right. I guess you do have to question the mental health of people who think that they can go and actually invade the U.S. Capitol and threaten members of Congress and steal things from their office and think that they won't be punished. Is it because they have mental health issues, Or maybe is it because just of the arrogance, because these people were white and they knew that they could do this and that they didn't think they'd face the same punishment that they would if they had been black? So we really don't know.
Really don't know. So I'm going to leave it there. Dr. Sharon Wright Austin, our political scientist in residence, we will be checking back in with you as we walk down this road with impeachment. Folks, it's Today with Dr. K. I'm Dr. K. Wise Whitehead. Stay with us.